Good morning. Good morning. Testing.
Thursday,
the 20th of October, at Oyster
Bay at Margo and Allen Hunt's house.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. This month's gone again, isn't it? 20th already.
Can you believe it? Okay, yeah. Now let's see how we do. Stop. Good morning. This is Margo Hunt. Recording at the Hunt's house in Oyster Bay in Chincoteague, Virginia on October 20th, 2005 for the oral history project of the Chincoteague Library. We have with us this morning Mr. Jimmy Adams, the president of Adams Marine Construction. And I'm going to ask him a few questions, please. How and when did you come to be in that business, Mr. Adams?
Well, I've been doing this type of work since 1955 when I got out in the Army, but I was working for somebody else until 1969. And I started doing some work up here for the Oyster Bay community. And one thing led to the other, so here we are. Seems like it's been a busy time, because this type of work, it always needs repairs done or replacing one type of material with another type, and people building on pilings, that has to be done. So it seems like it's been always plenty of work go around.
So your work consists of providing people with pilings.
Pilings, bulkheads, piers, that type of thing.
Docks. Mm-hmm. And I would like you to describe how you build a bulkhead. What do you go through to build a bulkhead?
Well, the work's not too bad, but the hassle was so much trouble. you got to go through so many agencies to get permits, and then you have to put your piling in. And a lot of people don't put enough effort on their pilings, I don't think, because it's like anything else, that's the foundation. If that's not done right, then everything else is not going to be right. But you need to get the pilings in solid, tight, and then line up everything and put your stringers and cross braces and decking on, bolt it all together. It's just like putting a puzzle together. It's not that much to it. It's just work.
What kind of material do you use now for bulkheads?
Well, I use the vinyl mostly, but that stuff has gone up so high, people's going to go back salt treated. I'm afraid it's gone up 31% in 10 months.
Wow.
On account of that petroleum that's in it, I guess, you know. And I like the vinyl better, because it's guaranteed for a lifetime. Of course, you still have pilings and your cap boards and your whalers that's wood. And I try to use anything that's water going to be on. I try to use the 2.5 treatment, which is the heavy marine treatment. And it lasts pretty good, but still, if you have to replace a piece of it, you can do it without tearing your bulkhead down. So the vinyl's the way to go, I think. You know, but it's just getting so high, I don't know.
How much is it a foot now to build a bulkhead?
It depends on the length of the sheathing. They sell that stuff by the square foot, and right now for a 10-foot piece of the 2-foot wide material, it's about $105 a sheet, or $50 a running foot. And then you got your labor on top of that, then you backfill on top of that. It's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, what I like about it, you do it once and don't have to fool with it anymore. This other stuff, they say it's guaranteed for 20 years, but I've not seen any of it last that long, that salt treated. You take up along this shore up here, some of it not even lasted 7 years. They had to replace it. And so it's depends on the area.
There's a big demand for your business right now.
Right now, it's because what people, a lot of people putting in new bull kids, and some people's getting the old ones replaced. So, I've had people tell me when they're selling lots, they had lots for sale and they couldn't sell them. I said, well, look at it this way. You come down here to buy a lot to build on, what would you rather have? One that's already built on, or one that you got food with bulkhead and all that type of stuff with it, you know? So they went ahead and bulkhead, and then they come back and told me that they doubled their money on what the cost of bulkhead was when they sold their property. So that's the reason why people bulkheading their lots.
What's the relationship between the tide and what you do?
Well, it's nature, I guess, but when the tide is up and you're trying to work on the bottom whaler, and you just forget it. You got to wait till the... You work with nature. You don't work against it. You're not going to gain much.
So you can't put those bottom whalers in until the tide is low.
The tide's down, yeah. So you have to get those bottom whalers down as low as you can in order to retain the pressure that's behind them. If you got it way up and you got a long distance between the top bottom whaler and your ground level, it's likely want to bulge out. But if you get that bottom whaler down so you can catch that extra weight so that you don't have such a long span to hold, it works better. And of course it depends on where you're at. If you're on sand and it's not very deep water, you can get by with just the top whaler without any piling in front of it. Just pull it back and hold it, you know, with your tie backs.
So there'd be a lot of difference between the work that you would do, say, here in Oyster Bay, as opposed to what you might do on the Chincoteague Channel?
Yeah, because along the channel, the water's a lot deeper. And a lot of places, see, it depends on what kind of soil you're putting it in. If you got mud, you got to put something there that's going to hold it completely. Or sand, if you got a sandy bottom, you can put your bulkhead in, and once that sand closes around it, it's just like sitting in concrete. It's not going to go anywhere. So it don't take as, not like as much to hold it, and you don't have to penetrate down as deep as you do if you're in a muddy area. Because that mud, you put pressure on that, and it's going to push right out. But if you got your bulkhead in, you got your tieback system in right, you don't have a problem with it. But
do you see the tides increasing and the storms increasing in this area in the last few years, or do you think it's normal?
Well, a lot of it depends on the moon. If the moon's full, the tides come in fuller. And something a lot of people don't understand, 2 days after the full moon, the tides are fuller than they are when the moon's full.
I didn't understand that.
Well, I didn't either, but I, you know, like I say, working around it, and I found it out. And if the wind's northeast, we're going to have high tides. I don't care what the moon's doing. but years ago, they used to have what they call blowout northwesters. If the wind comes northwest, the tides would blow way out. Now then we get a lower tide with the wind southwest than we do if it's northwest. And I've listened to an old fellow talk the other day. He's 86 years old, so he's been around long enough to know. He said, with the wind southwest, you're not only knocking the tide down where it's entering the inlet, but it's blowing the water that's in here up the bay, up towards Ocean City, up that way. So that makes the tides go down lower, too.
Hmm.
But I don't know. I look at the water problem where the tides is up higher a little different than the scientists do. They say this big ice cube that's melting up there, you know, is causing the tides to come up higher, which it might be. But I think a lot of us do to these environmentalist people don't want you to dig out anything. Everything's filling in, so when everything's filled in, it don't take as much water for it to come up. And if it's already full of mud, and that same amount of water comes in that was coming in 10 years ago, it's naturally going to be up higher, isn't it? That's the way I look at it. I don't know.
Maybe too much building?
Well, I don't know. The building might be pushing everything out in the water. I don't know, but I just think it's all this stuff that comes in out of the ocean and the bays and stuff that comes in around the shorelines, and it's just filling up. Everything's filling up. I know you used to be able to sail all the way around this island with no problem. Now you got to go when the tide's up, or a lot of places you can't get around. And that tells me it's filling in, because if the water was coming from the where the ice is melting, there would be more water instead of less when the tide was down. We might remember whether the tide was down or not, you're still going to have that same amount of water.
True.
But like I said, they're scientists, they belong to know.
When you can't work, there's times of the year that you really can't work, aren't there?
Well, the only time we don't work is if everything's froze over, or it's so hot that we, you know, the mosquitoes and the gnats eat you up if you try and work on these marsh. But most of the time we work, because I try to have three or four things going at one time, and the reason for it is if I can't work one place, I can work somewhere else.
And you have them strategically located so that they're not on the same tide scheme?
Well, it really doesn't matter, because if the tide's down, I can work on bottom whalers on one area, and if the tide's up, I can work on top whalers in another area, see? That's hard to tie back system. You know, we, like I say, you got to work with Mother Nature, because she's going to do what she wants to do anyhow, and then you got to adapt to it.
How many people do you have helping you now?
Well, I got Michael. He's actually in charge of everything now. And
is that your son?
Uh-huh. And his cousin and another boy from up Pocomo. He just come back from Iraq, second duty trip. He's over there, so he's been working with us now about 3 months, I guess. And then I try to help what I can, but they tell me the best way I can help them is stay in their way.
I bet you got a lot of people calling you for work.
Yeah, they there's always somebody that needs something.
How far away does your business extend? Do you go up to Corbin Hall, say?
Well, I go up past that. I used to work all the way from Ocean City to Cape Charles, but now I got so much to do locally, there's no need to run way off there and work. Because you kill 2 hours a day just traveling, plus your gas expenses. Of course, some people works up the Ocean City and Ocean Pines, but I try to limit the Captain Cove and Chincoteague and in that area, Greenback.
Captain Cove is really building fast, isn't it?
Yeah, but they've gone nearly as far as they can go with the waterfront property because they don't have much of it left anymore, but they got a lot of building going on back up in the inshore. They got a lot of lots up there.
Have you had some interesting people that you worked for, Mr. Adams?
Well, I've had CIA agents, FBI agents, and all that kind of stuff. Ever?
Can you tell us some stories about some of those jobs that you might have had?
Well, I had fun. I had one I thought was funny, and he didn't think it was funny. But that CIA agent was telling me when they had that thing up in New York, you know, a couple years ago, said that the mayor used to be a judge, and he used to carry cases in front of him, you know, for to be decided. I said, when you see him again, I said, you tell him I said he done a good job. Just like if it meant something. And he said he would. But, I've had some different dealings with people up here. Most of the people are really nice people, but you find one once in a while, they don't think no other way, but theirs is right. And I just adapt to it and go on. I says, their problem, let them rock it, you know.
Now there's a person who helps you through getting permits, isn't there? And that.
Well, I usually refer everybody to Ellen Grimes, Resource Management, down at Franktown. She's pretty good. The only thing I'm not crazy about, she's a little bit of a environmentalist. But the thing of it is, when she goes before the Wetland Board, most times she gets what she wants because she knows what she can get start with. And that saves a lot of time. And she does a pretty good job. But I tell her she's too much of a environmentalist.
So you're not going to tell us any stories about, funny stories about people you've worked with?
No, I'd have to start with her if I did that.
Tell us a little bit about your childhood. Where did you grow up? Where'd you go to school?
I went to school over here to Atlantic. Of course, it's Arcadia now. Or that's where I graduated from. I was born in Chrisfield. I went to Marion Station first grade. Second grade through to sixth, I went to Girdle Tree. And then I went to Snow Hill, seventh and eighth. And then we moved down to Wattsville in the ninth. On through to 12th, I went to Atlantic.
That was quite a commute from Chrisfield to Marion Station.
Yeah. But I probably wouldn't have went to school if it hadn't been for sports. I like to play football and baseball, and he had good school to do it. So. But
what did your family do?
Well, they were all farmers when we lived up in Girdle Tree. That's what I did, was working on a farm. My grandfather, he tended chickens, and we moved down to Wattsville. He was getting old, too old to do much of anything then, and I went to work up to Pocomo. I worked every Thursday and every Saturday up through the American Store Company when I was in the last 3 years I was in high school. And then I went down to Newport News Shipyard and stayed down there I don't know, about 6 months, I guess. Caught Massey and myself. We graduated together. He got Massey Ford Company up in Pocomo. And they didn't have any exhaust systems or anything in those boats where we were working. I told Colton, I said, I'm getting out of here. I said, I might as well be working in a mine somewhere. You can come up coughing up that old black stuff. And so I come on back home. I worked with my uncle, Wal Maddox, in construction, and I've been in construction ever since. I worked in there with him till I went in the Army in 1953. And when I got ready to get out, Lieutenant Boyd, he was our company officer, he told me, said, if you stay in for a year, said, I'll extend for a year, which you could do it back then, he said, I'll have you made sergeant. So I rode home and I asked Mom, I said, what's Uncle Al doing? And he wrote back and said, tell him, come on home and make a crane operator out of him. So that's how that got started. And so that lieutenant told me, said, I wish you would stay in, said, I'll have you made sergeant. I said, no, I'm going to go home and be a PFC. He said, well, you're already a corporal. I said, yeah, but I'm going to be a poor, foolish civilian. And he was a nice guy. He wanted me to go to college. He graduated from University of Alabama. He says, I can write you a letter of recommendation, and you can come out just like I am. I thought to myself, you're dumber than I am. What am I going to come out for you for? He wasn't dumb, but he just didn't know what he was doing where we were putting up that, we worked in a signal corps putting up construction lines, and he didn't know, but I'd been over there in Germany over a year, and that's all we'd done. And so I helped him right much. That's why he was going to do me a big favor. But I come home, and my father said, come here, I'm going to put you on this crane. He said, now this lever does this, and this one does that. He said, you can feel the rest of them out as you go. And that was how I got educated.
Well, how did you move from that crane to building bulkheads?
Well, you'd use the crane building bulkheads then. Used excavators now, but back when I started, there wasn't any excavators around. You just used the cranes and drop hammers and jets.
Did you just see the need for bulkhead building, or there wasn't anybody else doing it? Or
well, I had to have something to do, and that was there, I guess. I got in it. But when I first started, I was using the drag line, the dozer, to level down what fill it dug. Then the 5 minutes, I think it was 72 or 73, 4, somewhere along in that area, they wouldn't let you do any more filling. And so I had to find something else to do. So I'd done this before anyhow, so I just kind of fell in it.
Are you in your parents' house, living in your parents' house now in Wattsville?
Yeah. The old house, I tore that down and added on to my mother's and stepfather's house. And that's where we're living at now.
Do you still have a garden?
Oh, yeah.
What are you growing in your garden this year?
Clams, fish, and oysters. That's what I tell everybody. I grow tomatoes and cabbage, string beans and butter beans and turnips and turnip greens. But I tell everybody I swap them off for fish and oysters and clams. So that's what I'm growing.
How do you find time to garden and work too?
I do that while I'm resting. No, it's like anything else. If you want to do something, you'll find time to do it. If you don't want to do it, you're busy and can't do it for some reason. I don't know why, but that's the way it works. Fellow about being left-handed. I said, they always told me somebody left-handed owed the devil a day's work. He said, no, Jimmy, that's not the way it is. He said, everybody was born right-handed, said, but some of us overcome it. I said, that was a really good answer.
I've always been left-handed. You're right-handed.
I use both. I use right-handed most times.
So you're ambidextrous.
I can't write very good with either hand. I tell everybody when I write something, they want to read it right quick. Because after it gets cold, I can't even understand it.
Now your health is real good now, isn't it?
I feel pretty good now. I can't do like I used to, but the doctor tells me that ain't never going to happen anymore, so I just do what I can do. If I get tired, I quit.
That's not a bad life, is it?
Mm-hmm. What year were you born?
33.
And do you have siblings that are still here on the Eastern Shore?
Yeah, well, Michael, he's, I work for him, actually, because everything's in his name now. But I got a son over here, Jim Jr. He hauls fill material, and him and hired, what is his name? Can't think of his last name now. Anyhow, they take down trees, clear lots, and that kind of stuff.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I got a brother.
And where is he in the area?
He lives in Snow Hill. Yeah, he retired out of the Coast Guard. He stayed in 28 years. Yeah, I'm not Coast Guard, Air Force.
That's a long time, 28 years in the Air Force.
Yeah, well, he liked to do nothing, and that's what he done. And so I passed him already for a couple of years.
You had a stent 2 years ago?
2 years ago. Yeah, because when I went up there, that doctor told my wife, said his birth certificate might say 70, but his body says he's 55, 57. I told her, I looked right at her. He's standing right there. I said, we better get another doctor because this man's a fool. I said, I know what I could do when I was 55, 57. I can't do it now. And but he's done a good job. I give him credit for that.
Now, is he in Salisbury?
And that nurse practitioner, they call him now, but that lady, she's just as smart as a lot of doctors I've seen. And but I caused her face turn red. She says, they were talking about giving me a pacemaker or tribulator or some kind of flibulator, whatever it is they call them, you know. And then they decided I didn't need anything. And she told me, she says, you're getting straightened out. She said, you're going to be in better shape than you were when you come in here. I said, I hope so, because they Paul buried me in here. I said, well, next day I'll be in better shape than that. But I said, they'll be glad to get rid of me. But she told me I'd be all right.
Now, you do have some restrictions on what you eat, if I remember.
The main thing I can't eat is something sweet. And I do that sometimes, but I'm not supposed to, I'll put it that way. Mm-hmm.
And your wife is good at keeping you on your diet.
Well, she does the best she can.
How long have you been married?
37 years.
Is she a local gal?
Pocomo. I laughed the other night. You know how these cotton-picking telemarkers are. They called, you know, and this is Hazel there, just like they knew who she was, you know. I said, no. He said, well, she promised to contribute $50 to this abused spouse organization. Says, do you want to do that? I says, well, I tell you, she's pretty well got my house broke. She's not had beat and bang on me now for a right good while. So I don't think I'll want to contribute anything. Click up there. So when she came home, I asked her, was she going to contribute? She said, no, I never told nobody I was going to give me that. But he thought that, you know, she wasn't there. He could just tell me that, and I just wrote him out a check, you know.
Do you have any grandchildren?
Yeah, I got great grandchildren.
Wow.
Because they were kidding me about my age. They said, you're a great grandfather. I said, well, if you got to be one, you might as well be a great one. Yeah, I got 4 grandchildren and 2 great grandchildren.
Are the great-grandchildren pretty little?
Well, one of them's in the first grade, and one of them is just 2.5-year-old, I guess.
Where do they live?
Well, Roger Lee and his family lives over there close to me. And Terry Lynn, she lives over on St. Tugger in Sharon. She just got married a while back. She's living across the bay somewhere. She's teaching school.
Let me ask you another question about your work. Do you have to know a lot about boats and general marine life?
Not really. The only thing we have to watch is not to tear up any more wetlands than what the permit says we can tear up, on account of the, you know, oysters, clams, and fish, or worms, or whatever they got, you know, in the water. They don't want to kill those. And so we try to, you know, be as careful as we can with it. And when we go across the marshes, we always use mats so we don't tear up the marsh much, you know. And once you take those mats up, in 6 months, it grows right back. But if you try to go out without anything, you tear it up so bad, they don't never get right like it belongs.
How much of your life has been in boating? Any?
The only time I fooled any boats is if I got moved my barge somewhere or something, you know, working. Mm-hmm. My wife, she always wanted a boat. I said, that's the last thing in the world I want to do, is be around the water when I'm not working. I'm around it all the time.
So she never got you to get her a boat, huh?
Well, we had one one time, and we used it quite a bit. And I never did like to go fishing, because every time we carry somebody fishing, I'd have bait or hook, start the boat up and run it up and let it drift by. I never got to do any fishing. I said, this is just another job to me. I don't need that.
Do you ever go fishing now?
No. No, if I want fish, I go over there and tell Mike McGee I want some fish, and he'll throw me one and I catch it. That's how I go fishing.
Pretty easy fishing.
Well, I felt kind of sorry for her when her husband, or he left her, I guess. And after I dealt with her for a while, I wonder how he stayed with her as long as he did, but that was their problem. But I did put her cap on her bulkhead over here, and backfilled it, put topsoil on it, seeded it, put straw over it, kept it watered. Before I go to work and after I come home, I just done that just for the, you know, help her, because it was dry that summer. And she never did send me her money for, you know, my bill. So I sent her another one. I never heard nothing from it, so I called her. Oh, the reason why I didn't pay it is because you didn't do this and you didn't do that. I thought to myself, well, I know she's not dumb. She sees the grass there. I had to get there, you know, if we didn't plant it. So I sent her another bill. I told her, I said, I'm not going to argue with you. So I just sent her another bill, and on the bottom of it, I put, if this material we use is not satisfactory, just say so, and I'll come get it. Because I'm going to come scoop it up and haul it away. 3 or 4 days later, I got my check. But why you have to treat people like that? You know, it don't make sense to me.
Does that happen often?
No. No, that's probably the only time that's happened up here. Now, I've had... over there where the Ryans is putting their home up now, that Mosville over on Hibiscus, you know. Over there beside, I can't think of the lady's name now, but...
But it's here in Oyster Bay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, her boss gave her that house. He's living in Alabama now, but she was his secretary for years and years and years, and he got so he couldn't come back up here, so he let her have the home. I can't think of the name of it.
Rose Nolan?
I believe it was Nolan.
Uh-huh. Rose Nolan.
Mm-hmm. And right beside that. Well, we put that bulkhead in, Ladd was the man named and owned it, somewhere up in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And he paid me for the material, but when I sent him a bill for the labor, no, nothing. And I tried to get in touch with him every way I knew. I had a lawyer. The lawyer said he couldn't do anything about it because he was out of state. Of course, he wasn't much of a lawyer, I found that out. But anyhow, he got ready to sell the property. And somebody up that way, I forget who it was now, told me that I better check in and get my money because he was selling the property. So I went down and he got some paper on it. So he had to pay me before he could sell it. And what the cotton picking lawyer cost me a third of it, and he never done anything. I had to go over to the courthouse, carry the papers, everything over there and all that. I had to do it myself. I thought to myself, what in the world am I paying him $1,500 for? And so I done away with him. I ain't had no more dealings with him.
Did you get your money?
I got my money. All but that $1,500.
What a shame.
But I mean, that was my fault for getting that. He's supposed to be a lawyer, but he never showed me anything. I wasn't a fool with him to start with, but I used to be friends with his father. I used to play baseball with his father, Dole Central Shore League. And I figured, you know, I knew he was higher R8, and but I didn't know this guy wasn't.
Tell about the old Central Shore League. That's a baseball team, baseball league? When was that?
Well, it quit back in the, I guess, middle 50s, because I think 56 or 57 was the last year that they had it. But they had some good teams. I played with Pocomoke up here, and years ago, it used to be called the Eastern Shore League. Old Carl Frillo used to play with the Brooklyn Dodgers. He played there, when he was young. And it was quite a, that was, he played in Pocomoke, but it was quite a few people played in Salisbury and Cambridge that played in the, they went on from there into the professionals, you know. And they had some pretty good ball players.
So where did you play? And what teams did you play?
I played with Pocomoke.
And you played what other teams?
Well, we played Cambridge, Salisbury, Berlin, Snow Hill. Chrisfield had a team.
Was there any team down in this area of the shore?
Well, they had another league. That was Matonkin League, they called it. And they had teams from Greenback had a team. Bloxham had a team. Belhaven had a team. Cape Charles had a team. There's two or three others. But that league had just about gone when I started playing.
Now, was this baseball?
Baseball.
Baseball. Yeah. Not softball.
No, softball. I played Pocomoke. Oh, I quit playing when I got 56. I figured it was time to quit.
What position did you play when you played with the Central League?
In the outfield. Mm-hmm. Played in the outfield.
So you were a big hitter?
Well, I wasn't all that good a hitter, but if they hit them, I could go get them.
Were you fast? A fast runner?
Well, I'm a lot faster than I am now, I'll put it that way.
And where did you play football?
Atlantic.
Atlantic at Arcadia.
Yeah, we won the championship that year, last year of league.
What position did you play?
Halfback. Yeah.
A good runner.
Yeah, last game we played was Thanksgiving Day, and we beat Shinkatig 40-something other than nothing.
Oh.
And I scored 4 touchdowns that day. I scored 11 that year.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
Yeah, so, and we won the championship, and the year after that, a good friend of mine, Larry Bonwell, he was from Sykes's, he got killed He had the only, of course, none of our equipment would do, wouldn't even let you use it now. It was so cheap built. But we had this one helmet that had a nose guard on it, the only one. But that thing was so limber you could twist it in the kind of way you wanted to. It wasn't any good. But he liked that because it had the nose guard. And I was in Duper News Shipbuilding Friendship School. And we'd been coming home just about every weekend so we could go to a football game. But that weekend we didn't come home. And he got killed right there on the field under landing.
Oh.
And, so.
What did the nose guard have to do with that?
Well, the nose guard was the strongest thing about the helmet, but he got hit in the head. He'd on somebody. And that old helmet, like I say, if he had a piece of cardboard on his head, it'd done just as much good as that helmet done. And he just...
Equipment has really changed, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, my land. Yeah, when I was in the Army, I played football and baseball in the group as high as you could get in service. And their equipment was way ahead of what we had. And, yeah, do and die for TDY, that temporary duty, we called it.
Well, that must have been fun to have beaten Chincoteague by such a big score on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's fun beating them now.
Oh. And here you are right now working on Chincoteague.
Yeah. And my grandson, Thomas, he played football, and now he's a town cop. Over here, he started this week.
Huh. So you never got too far away.
Mm-mm.
That's great.
No.
Well, thanks, Mr. Adams, very much.
You're welcome.
You're a wonderful storyteller, and you've led a very interesting, wonderful life. We appreciate you coming.